We're going to start today, we'll review a little bit from yesterday, from Kuf Amud Bet, basically in the middle. After the Mishnah is quoted, the Mishnah quotes this case of the Safek Ben Shiva, Safek Ben Tesha. So we don't know, right? The woman, okay, the Mishnah says, Mi shalosh shahata achar ba'ala shlosha chodashim. She doesn't wait for 3 months. V'niseit v'yalda, ve'ein yadua im ben tisha l'rishon or ben shiva l'acharon. So now the Mishnah says, what do? They work in the Mikdash. Okay, and this is what's going to create a problem because Shmuel says that if you have 10 random Kohanim, we said that as long as, if both are Kohanim, both fathers, both potential fathers, we don't know, was he born to this father or the other father? If both fathers are Kohanim, then the son goes and works in the Mikdash. So he can work in. He works in this one's mishmar, and he works in the other one's mishmar. So Shmuel then gave this halacha, and he said that if you have 10 people standing together, and they're all kohanim, and one of them goes out and sleeps with a random pnuya, an unmarried woman, okay, in which case it's called znup, but it's not like an esh adish case. That child born from that relationship can't work in the mikdash, and we said because you need lizaro acharav, okay, you need to know who his father was. So if you need to know who his father was, we're going to say that in our case, which we're going to prove and then disprove, but we're going to prove first that our Mishnah must be talking about Znu. Okay? And therefore, that's the basic gist of it. That according to Shmuel, if you have a relationship of Znu and it leads to a child and you don't know who the father is, we're going to say that the kid can't work in the Mikdash. Our Mishnah said that if you have a case where we don't know who the child is, and we're going to assume, and I'll explain why in a minute, right? We saw this yesterday, that it's a znut case. Then we also say that in our Mishnah, it says he does work in the Mikdash. So that seems that our Mishnah contradicts Shmuel. So now the question is, why can't it be the other cases? So that's because, if you look, well, since we did this yesterday, we'll just follow on the chart that I made. Okay, so if you look here, it can't be after the husband dies. First, they give two options. Either the husband died, or it was a divorce case. Those are the two basic cases, right? So, either the husband died. The problem is that the Mishnah says, "Hu onen alehem v'hem onenim alav." And the words, "hem onenim alav," the fathers can become onen for that child. Right? They become an onen when that child dies. So they say, how could that possibly be? He's already dead, the first guy. So there's no possibility of hey monini malav. It would have to be the second one's onen alav. So therefore, that doesn't make sense. The grusha case can't work because it says hu ein mitameh lahem. And if the first guy, okay, let's take out our people. If the first possible father divorces the woman, okay, and then here's the second potential father. So we have two potential fathers. If the first father divorced her, then he can, and the first father's the real father, well, he could be metameh to him. And if he divorces the woman, then when she marries the second guy, the child's going to be a halal. And if the child's a halal, then there's no isur of tumah. So no matter what, miman of shach, we call it, right? However you look at it, it's going to come out that it's okay. So then they assume if it can't be death and it can't be divorce, it must be znut. I just want to make one side comment about this whole concept. What is the Gemara doing here? They're taking a Mishnah that gives all sorts of possibilities, right? And they're assuming that every possibility has to exist in every single case, right? In theory, you could just simply say that the Mishnah is whether he died or he divorced her or there was new, right? It could be a whole slew of possibilities, and some of the situations refer to one and some refer to both. In other words, it doesn't...
You have to be everything all the time.
Right, it doesn't have to be everything all the time. So, anyway, that's just a side point. But the Gemara doesn't have that approach right now. So then, they say it must be znut. And if it's znut, then it raises a problem for Shmuel, because then it's a case of znut. And then we say he does the avoda. And we said before that if it's znut, they don't do the avoda. So now, how do we reconcile that? So then the Gemara says, you missed two possible other options. One they're going to reject and one they're going to accept. So the one they reject is the Mima Enet. They say maybe it was a Miyun case, in which case she says, I don't want to be married to you anymore, right, when she gets older. And then, but the point is, that can't possibly be because we're talking about a case where she got pregnant and had a baby. And there's a Gemara's that talk about that the Mima Enet can't have a baby. So, right, the assumption is if she were to get pregnant, the baby would die. It would be dangerous. And that's why she's allowed to use birth control. Okay, so now the second one is Kiddushei Ta'ut. And they prove from this source, that from Rabbi Yehuda said the name Shmuel, Mishum, Rabbi Ishmael, that the word vihi lo nitpasa, okay, the word vihi comes to include an extra case of a woman who's not considered a sota, and that's this woman of kiddushei ta'ut. Okay, in which case, we're going to say that she, basically, it's like a miyum case, where she leaves the marriage without any sort of divorce or anything else. So if they got married with a condition, and the condition was never fulfilled, we're just reviewing the bottom of Kufama, but we did yesterday. If she gets married based on a condition, and she then, right, she gets engaged based on a condition, the kiddushin, then she gets married to the guy, and then the kiddush, the tnai, the condition she made never happens, or it's false, or something, the marriage is canceled, okay, and then it was as if there was no marriage. So then, you don't have the problem anymore that you had in the Grusha case that the kid will be a halal, because the kid won't be a halal when she marries the second guy, because it'll be mutar for her to marry the second guy. So they finally find a case where all the options of the Mishnah can work. Okay.
Does that kid have
any status? Weird status? No. No. The first kid, you're saying, for the first marriage? No. Okay? Because you can't do that. First of all, it's just a kid out of wedlock. So that's not a problem. It's just, right, you have this kid who just wasn't married. This comes up, we're going to see it when we get to Afkeinu Rabban on the Kiddushin Minei, which I think we saw already. Sugya of Hafka'at Kiddushin, did we get to it? Can't remember now. But definitely we're going to see some sugyas further on in Nashim about, definitely in Gittin, I'm not sure if it probably comes up in Keshubot also, about which sugyas we could say that we can uproot the marriage. And then they say, well, it turns your Bi'ilah into a Bi'ilah Tznut. How could you do that? It was as if they, right? And as we're not worried about the child, because the child, no matter what, is only a mamzer if she's an Eshet Ish. And in the first marriage, she wasn't married to somebody else. She just wasn't married at all. It's just this case like with the Pnuya. Okay? It's a Znut case, except it's Znut retroactively, which we treat a little differently than Znut from the beginning, where it was intentional Znut, right? This is unintentional because you really did it with a marriage. It just turned out the marriage never happened. Okay. Hayushnehem Kohanim. So now, again, we're talking about both are possible Kohanim, and they're going to talk about the case that if you hit your father or you curse your father or mother, right, or hit your father or mother, you don't get the punishment of chenek. You don't get killed, which normally you would. Tana Rabbanan. Hikaze v'chazar v'hikaze, kilel ze v'chazar v'kilel ze, kilel shnehem bevat echad, hikash shnehem bevat echad, chayav. Okay, there's four cases. Really two, okay? It could be, right, he hits, I'll just say it's more simpler, it's two cases. He hits or curses first the first father, then the second father. Okay, that's vizeh charzeh. Okay, or he curses them together. Okay, he says, I curse both of you. Okay, so now what's the story? So according to the Tanna Kamma, what does it say? He's chayav no matter what he does, because in any case, he cursed both of them. So now we can be machayav him vadai, because he cursed one of them, right? He definitely cursed his father, okay? Whether he did it in the same mouthful or whether he did it 1 minute after the other. But now comes Rabbi Yehuda and he says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bevat achat chayav, bezeh achar zeh patur. He says, if he cursed them both, I curse you and you, right? Together. So then, right, let's say I curse Reuven and Shimon at the same time, in the same mouthful, then you're chayav. But if you say, I curse you, Reuven, and a minute later you say, I curse you, Shimon, then you're not chayav. What's the assumption of this? That what's the issue? In order to get punished, you need a warning. A warning, according to Rabbi Yehuda, has to be a hatra'at vadai. It has to be a definite warning, right? Think about it. If you say to someone, maybe you'll get killed if you do this, right? That's not really a real warning, okay? So before each act, there has to be a warning. So before he curses Reuven, they say to him, if you hit Reuven, he might be your father and you might get killed. That's a hatra'at safek, right? A minute later, they say to him before he curses Shimon, if you curse Shimon, he might be your father and you might get killed. So that's hatra'at safek. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not a good hatra'at. According to Chachamim, it's fine. Because in any case, he knows that one of them is his father, and in the end, you end up with where hatra'at safek works. So now, okay, that's the simple understanding right now of Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda. But now the Gemara is going to ask, Vahatanya, doesn't it say in a different place, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Patur Bevatachat? Doesn't he say that if you do it at the same time, you're patur? Okay, we're going to see why in a minute, right? Because it doesn't make sense, antithetical to what we just said, right? If you do it b'vat echad, all the more so, you should be chayav. So now what do they say? Trei tnai aliva to Rabbi Yehuda. Two different understandings of what Rabbi Yehuda said. One thought he said one thing, and one thought he said, right? Well, we'll see in a minute what one thought, but your assumption, I assume at this point is, right, let's just chart it out, okay? So we have Zachar Zeh, right? And then we have Bevat Echad, okay? So what did we say? Tanakama is Chayav in both cases. Rabbi Yehuda says, Bezachar Zeh Patur, because it's Hatra'at Zafek, right? And Bevat Echad Chayav. So now comes a bright and says, but wait, Rabbi Yehuda says, Bevat Echad Patur. So you're going to assume that it means he's patur b'zachar zeh and b'vat echad, right? That would be the assumption. But now we're going to see it's dafka na. Okay? According to Rabbi Yehuda, the second Rabbi Yehuda, it's going to be that zachar zeh is chayav and the case that's patur is bat echad. Okay? So it's going to be flipped. It's not going to be, and we'll see that in the end what they're going to say, I'm just sort of prefacing it so you understand where we're going. In the end they're going to say that the issue is not hatra'at safek according to the second opinion. Okay, according to the first opinion, it is Hatra'at Safek of Rabbi Yehuda. According to the second understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, no. Hatra'at Safek works. And that's why there's a different reason why Bat Echad doesn't work. That has nothing to do with Hatra'at Safek. That's why I want to make sure you understand that the second reading erases everything we know about Rabbi Yehuda until now. So now, what are they saying here? So my taima demanded patar. So why the guy who says it's patur, what's his reason? Amar Rabbi Chanina, Ne'emar bracha lamata, v'ne'emar bracha lamala. Ma lamala she'em bashutafut, af lamata she'em bashutafut. V'it kashaka ala klala. Okay, two things they say. The first thing is that we can make a comparison between the bracha lamala and bracha lamata. What are they talking about? Bracha doesn't mean bracha. Bracha means klala. Okay? Why does it mean klala and why do they say bracha? Because it's talking about cursing God. And they don't want to talk about cursing God. They don't want to say someone could curse God, right? It's like when you ask your kid, you know, your kid says, oh, you know, so-and-so cursed, and you say, well, what did he say, right? He doesn't want to say what he says, right? You know what? So they don't want to talk about cursing God with using the word klala, so they say bracha. So now, it talks about cursing God, and it talks about cursing man in the same context. So now what do they say? We're going to learn from one to the other. When you curse God, aim bashutafut. There's no one who goes with God. So when they talk about cursing God, they're clearly talking about cursing God, just God, without anybody else, okay? So therefore, the father also, it has to be a case where you cursed, again, it could be the father or the mother. Here, we're talking about the father because the mother is the badai. It's only a father case that's suffic. It's where you curse the father by himself. If you did it, bevat echad, and you curse Reuben and Shimon at the same time, okay, the way I look at it is, it's not as strong a curse. If you think about it in an extreme case, if you say, I curse all the Jewish people, some, okay, it doesn't mean very much, right? Like, do you take personal insult to that? Not really, right? It's not as strong a curse. So if you curse a group of people, it's much less strong. So the case where you're chayav mavet on cursing your father is when you curse your father, just your father, and you also could say that it has to do with cursing your father as part of who he is as your father. Whereas if you curse him with a group of people, it's not the same. It doesn't have the same effect. It's not the same avera, really. You haven't done the same act. So that's what his opinion is. In which case, bezer harzeh, now you see, will be chayav. Because zer harzeh, the issue is not hatra'at safek, the issue is shutafut. Okay? And therefore, you're patur because there's no shutafut here, as opposed to the first understanding of him that you'd be patur because it's hatra'at safek. Okay, so two different understandings. And then you have to say, this was only for klala, not for haka'a, right? Not for hitting. But then they say, v'itkash haka'a l'klala. Since haka'a and klala, right, they compare, they learn from one from the other because they're very similar. Okay. Ole b'mishmaro. Okay, now we learn that they go up in the mishmar, right? But they can't get the food, right? So now they say, v'chimeachar. Okay, so first the Gemara understands, ole b'mishmaro means he can go with the week that they're supposed to work, he can go. So the Gemara says, like this is human nature, right? There's no free food for him, so why is he going? In other words, why would he go to the Mikdash to work if he's not going to get any food? Like part of, remember, the Kohanim had no land. So they would go to the mikdash. That was their incentive, almost, right? You go, you get food. So the Gemara says, Lama oleh ha'amar bi'ina denavi mitzvah. What do you mean? He wants to get a mitzvah. In other words, it's not just the free food he's going for. He's going to work to get a mitzvah. So then they say, no, ela, that's not what they meant. They meant, ela ala lo katane ela oleh ba'al korcho. They mean, it sounds like, it doesn't say Allah b'mishmarosh shel zeh, and then he doesn't get the food. Allah would mean, if he happened to go in the mishmar, then he wouldn't get food. But now they're saying, no, that's not what it says, though. It says oleh, meaning he's supposed to go up. So now they want to know, why is he supposed to go up? Okay? It's not just because it's good for him to get a mitzvah, but there must be some reason why we're mechayev him, ba'al korcho. We force him. He has to work on the mishmar. Why does he have to work? Amar Rav Acha Bar Chanina, Amar Rabbi, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Pegam Mishpacha. What are they worried about?
They're worried about
that people will think that what? That there's some problem in the family. If they see that one kid in the family isn't going to the Beit HaMikdash, they're going to say, oh, there's a halal, there's a problem with someone married someone inappropriate, and they're going to start talking about this family. So they don't want that to happen. So they say he goes up, he doesn't eat. Okay, who's going to know whether he ate or not, right? He could have not been hungry. You know, that's not as noticeable. But to not go to the Mikdash would be very noticeable, and therefore we don't allow it. Okay, why people would think that, right? And people obviously didn't know, right? Nobody's counting exactly how many months. Nobody knows this kid's a Safek ben Shiva ben Teisha, right? Nobody's looking exactly what month did they get, right? What month did they get divorced, or did he, right? And then what month did she get married, and what month was the kid born? Who's calculating that? That no one's going to know. So therefore, we're concerned for that. The im hayushnehem b'mishmar. Okay, what if they were both in the same mishmar? Do you remember that? That then they could get the food. If they go to the same mishmar, they get the food because we say always, if you want to take something from someone, you have to prove it. If you're going to prove it, right, how are you going to prove it? If you're both in the same week, then clearly you have a good proof. You're definitely part of it. Now the Gemara is going to ask, Dilo, why can't you go if it's two different mishmar? Why can't you take the food? Right? Each one's going to push him off and say, oh, you're not in our mishmar, you're not in our mishmar, prove it. But now, what are they saying? Mishmar achad nami. It would be the same thing. What was with the mishmarot? Do you remember? Each family was, each beit, okay, there's, each mishmar is six batei av, six families, broader families. So with the assumption is that he's part of two of these different six families, right? So they're going to say it would be the same thing. Because what happens? Everybody gets a sixth, right? It's split up into the batei av. So the same thing. He's going to go to one family, one of the first one. Say, I want to get. They say, no, take from the other one. No, take from the other one. Okay? So now what do they say? Amar papa hachi kamar. It's only when they're in the same mishmar, the same beit av. This, by the way, is very reminiscent for those who learn Yoma of all these fights as to who gets what and the pious and the whole world of the Beit HaMikdash, right? We think of this perfect world and the perfect Beit HaMikdash and everything worked well. It was a lot of rivalry and tension and this is mine and this is mine. And
also when they changed the mishmar and Sukkot.
Right, exactly. There were two groups with Sukkot that were left out, and what do they do? And it's very much anyone who has kids and knows, right? I get my share. Everybody's their own thing. Okay, Hajar Nalach Nosim Al Anusa, moving to the 11th parak.
Very short question.
I'm sorry, we're in the 12th already. Wow, okay. Two more prokim left. Nearing the end, yeah.
None of this is entirely relevant to what goes on today, but today they can prove paternity. Would they accept that?
Right. So that's a good halachic question. What happens now when you prove paternity? Right. Right. It's a very good question. I don't remember how the post came.
7 or 9 months.
Right.
A lot of these questions can be resolved that couldn't be resolved then.
Right. I imagine. I don't remember all of the. I'm sure I've seen stuff about this, but I'm sure that there's different approaches about it. Like, I'll even give you an example. This isn't that case, but positive pregnancy test. Does a positive pregnancy test work? We talked about that. You only are known to be pregnant after 3 months. Nowadays, you can know after 5 weeks. You know, you don't get your period. You do a positive pregnancy test. You can do a blood test, which is even better than a... And your blood test shows I'm definitely pregnant. So now, do laws of pregnant woman apply to you? Like, you don't have Vesto. You don't have to check. Are you going to get your period and things like that? Or not? So there's two different approaches among the poskim. Some say, no, we go by the 3 months. And some say, no, we go by modern medicine. So I'm sure the same issues would apply here. You know, and then again, it's an issue of with a pregnant woman, so maybe it's not the biggest deal to say, okay, so check, you know, do a bedika. When it comes to issues of marriage and, you know, more complicated, I imagine that there might be more reason to rely on tests. But I don't know. It's a good thing to look up.
Even now, though, they kind of hold to this three-month thing because it's not as viable a pregnancy. In other words,
maybe I should clarify. We definitely hold by the 3 months, 100%.
Yes.
Even though now you could tell who the father is, they'll almost never in a Beijing allow anyone to get married under 3 months. Okay? And nowadays, I've actually discussed cases like this in class where people haven't been living together for years. They've had a civil divorce for years. And they haven't been living together, and it's clear that they're not having a baby together. And yet they still make them wait for 3 months. Once in a blue moon, if there's really extenuating circumstances and whatever it might be, they'll be mekel a little bit. But it's very hard. I remember Seth had a bunch of cases with work where he was trying to get the Beit Din to allow her to marry earlier. I forget exactly what the issues were. But, you know, she'd been pushed up and pushed up and pushed up, and finally she got there, and then she finally gets the halachic get from her husband who never gave her the get, and then they make her wait 3 months even though she's got a wedding date and, you know. But sometimes, I remember there's one case he had, I don't remember on what basis, but the Beit Din finally accepted it and let her get married earlier. But it's even in cases like that, it's very difficult. But I think it's more so in a case where we have a kid standing before us, then maybe they'd be willing to rely on a test. But not to milechatchila say, okay, let's someone get married. That's already much less so. Okay. Mitzvah chalitza b'shlosha dayanim. Okay, now we get to chalitza. Okay, now we're moving off of these relationships. We're getting into the court. How does the court work? This is very similar, and we'll see it quoted. The very beginning of Sanhedrin starts out with how many people sit on the Beit Din for various issues. Could be 5, 3, 5, 7, 27, 71. Okay, there's all sorts of things that come up. So now, mitzvah chalitza b'shlosha dayanim. Bafilu shloshtan hedyotot. Okay, the Mishnah says this very simply. Okay, which is what we call a stam mishnah. We're going to see later that it's not the only opinion. Okay? Okay, but what do we see here? 3 dayanim, even if they're 3 hedyotot. What does hedyotot mean? Regular people, not dayanim. So it's a very weird lashon of the mishnah. You need 3 dayanim, even if they aren't really dayanim, right? Okay, so we're going to talk about this in the Gemara. Chaltza b'min'al. Now we're going to have a whole list. We'll get more into detail into these cases tomorrow or further on in the Masechet, in the Perek. Chaltza b'min'al, if she does chalitza with a shoe, okay? Chalitza takshira, okay? A shoe made of leather. Ba'anpilya chalitza tapsula. She uses something made of bad, okay? Like a fabric, where it's not really a good shoe. The chalitza is kshira, because it says in the Torah, hana'al, right? So you need a shoe. And something, a shoe protects you. Something that doesn't protect is not a shoe. B'sandal, remember what he does, right? He takes his shoe off and she spits into the shoe. Okay, that's the way the tekes works. So it has to be, okay, we're going to see here that they give all these cases where it's kshira, but a lot of these cases are really b'dieved. You'll learn from the b'dieved, like what the ideal is. B'sandal sheyesh lo akev kasher. If it has a sole on it, that's at least the general interpretation of akev. There's a few different ones, but we'll go with it has a sole, kasher. V'she'en lo akev, pasul. Min ha'arkuva ulemata chalitza kshera. Okay, one interpretation of this is that he has his leg cut off. Okay? There's one opinion that if you have your leg cut off, you can't even do chalitza. And then they explain this some other way. But when it has to do with the ritzuot, they had these sandalim, really. Like the ideal shoe there was a sandal-type shoe that laced up the leg, okay? So here they're talking about if you undo the laces from high up or the part of, according to one interpretation, it's really the undoing of the laces or the straps is the word, not laces. The straps of the shoe is really the issue. But anyway, we'll explain the other way, which I think is more simple, which is to say if he's wearing a shoe, and as he has a fake leg or so, right? His leg only exists from somewhere below his knee. So if it's from somewhere below his knee, then the chalitza is kshira. Mina arkuva ulamala, if it's above his knee, right, his leg was cut off higher up, chalitza psula, it doesn't work. Chalitza b'sandal she'eno shelo. Okay, here we're going to see, these are the b'dieved cases. Really, you're supposed to use your own sandal. But if he did it with a sandal that wasn't his, O b'sandal shel eitz, right? It was supposed to be of or, and this one's eitz. O b'shel smol, b'yamin. Or he takes his left sandal and wears it on his right foot, because clearly what's the implication? You have to take it off your right foot. So let's say you don't have a right shoe for some reason. You only have a left shoe. So if you put your left shoe on your right shoe, your right foot, and then you take it off, these three cases, even though they're less than ideal, the chalitza is kshera. Chalitza begadol shu yachol lahaloch bo, o bekatan shu chofet rov raglo, chalitzata kshera. If you have a shoe that's too big on you, but you can still walk with it, okay? Right, you ever do that? You walk in shoes that are a little too big on you. Or if the shoe's a little too small, but it still covers the majority of your foot, then chalitzata kshera. Okay, back to the Gemara. We're going to deal exclusively with the dayanim today. Since it's afilu shlosha hadyotot dayanim lamali, why does it say dayanim? Right? If you don't, if you just, you could just say mitzvah chalitza b'shlosha. It doesn't need to say dayanim. So what does it teach you here? Ha kamash malan de beinam b'shlosha shiyodin lahakrot ke'en dayanim. They have to be learned. Okay, now here you see an interesting thing about society then. Not everyone could read Hebrew, okay? So they're saying it has to be three people that need, that can be able to read, or really it means here to dictate. What's the issue? There's a whole ceremony that comes up in the Torah. He's supposed to say something, and she's supposed to say something, right? If you look in Dalet here, the whole pasuk is there, I'll read it. From Dorian Kape, Zayin to Tet. If he doesn't want to marry, right, do the yibum, they go to this kenim, or she goes to this kenim, v'amran, she says to them, so she has to say these words, me'ein yivmi lahakim la'achiv shem b'Yisrael lo ava yivmi. She has to say that. So how is she going to say that if she doesn't know how to read? So she needs the dayanim to be able to read it to her. Okay? V'kar'u lo zikne iro. So now the zikne iro call him. I'm going to read these anyway. Pay attention to all the words because we're going to darshan a lot of them, okay? So now, the zikne iro call him. Okay, I want you to just notice, by the way, first she goes to this kenim. Okay, we're going to darshan these words soon, so that's why I'm pointing them out. In the pasuk I just read, she goes to this kenim. Then it says, v'kar'ulo zikne iro. Okay, so we're going to darshan something from these, the fact that these two are here. Okay? Then it says vikar'ulo. Okay, I'm writing some of the words that we'll darshan. I don't know if I'm going to remember by heart all the words we're going to darshan. But karulo zikne iro v'dibru elav v'ama v'amar. Again, what does he say? Lo chapatzti lekachta. He has to say that. V'nigsha yivimto elav. Now she goes to him. Le'enei azkenim. B'chaltza na'alo me'al raglo. She takes his shoe off from his foot. V'yarka b'fanav. She spits in his face. Or in front of him, really, not in his face. She spits in front of him. Ve'anta v'amra, again she says, kacha ye'aseh la'ish asher lo yivneh et beit achiv. Okay, very much like kacha ye'aseh la'ish, right? Asher melech hafetz bikaro. It sounds very much like that, right? Okay, this is what the person does, asher lo yivneh et beit achiv. I assume kacha ye'aseh la'ish was a negative terminology used then, right? Okay, so now, what are we going to learn from this? So number one, we learned it has to be shlosha that can read to other people like Dayani. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'chamisha. Okay, he says you need five people. My time at Tanakama. What's the reason for Tanakama for three? Ditanyas kenim shnayim ve'ein beitin shakul. What do we see? Skenim? Skenim is two. And what do you see? Ein beitin shakul. You can't have an even number. So you add a third. Very simple. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Ziknei shnayim, zkenim shnayim. It calls them zkenim, and it calls them ziknei iro. So what do you see? They're referred to as two different things. What do you learn from that? Ziknei shnayim, zkenim shnayim. And again, ein bedin shakul. So you have to add, mosifim aleim od echad, harei kan chamisha. Okay, that's how you get to five. V'tana kama, now we're going to have a ping pong, okay? Each one is going to say, oh, well, if you use that for that, right, what do you use that word for? And what do you use that word for? And what do you, right? They're going to go back and forth. So now, Tanakama, Rabbi Yehuda learned from Zikne. So now Zikne, what does Tanakama do with it? The Tanakama hai Zikne my avidle. Mibayle, he needs it. Liribuye afilu shlosha hedyotot. Zikne iro comes to include even random zkenim. Okay, random people, which is actually a little odd because usually zkenim meant the distinguished people. So here they're saying it calls, I guess you could say this kinim of the distinguished people, and when it says zikne, it comes to add a different case. The Rabbi Yehuda, hedyotot menale, where does he learn hedyotot then? Right? If zikne, chachamim, Tanakami uses to learn hedyotot, and he needs it for his drasha of three, of five, where does he learn hedyotot from? Nafkale mi le'ene. Okay, it said, if you remember, okay, I'll read it again, I forgot to point out that word. Okay, as she's about to do the chalitza, she goes le'enei haskenim. So now, what does this have to do with hedyoto? So what happens? They say le'enei comes to tell you what? Da'amamar le'enei prat l'sumi. Enei comes to teach you that the dayanim who do this can't be blind. Now, if you say, I'll just tell you before I read it inside so I don't lose you, if you say that they can't be blind, if they're dayanim, they obviously can't be blind because we're going to learn from somewhere else that dayanim can't be blind. So if that's the case, there'd be no chiddush. They wouldn't have to tell us le'enei if it's clearly dayanim. So it must be that because they're teaching le'enei to exclude the blind people, it must be because it could even be hedyotot, in which case you would think blind people could do it, and it comes to teach you, they can't do it. So now we're going to see. Since you need it to take out the blind people, shmamina da afilu hedyoto. Why? If you thought you need Sanhedrin, real dayanim, lamalilamute sumim. Why would you need to be mema'et to exclude the sumim? Miditani Rav Yosef nafka. It already teaches us that Rav Yosef learned it out. Ditani Rav Yosef, kishem shebeitim minukim betzedek. Just like they have to be totally clean, like a pure of righteous people. They also have to be without a mum. This goes back to the sugi we started with yesterday. Okay, again, people who are respected by the community have to have a certain look to them. People have to be able to look at them and say, wow, these people are look good. Again, in the eyes of people, if people think, oh, this guy has some problem, and they're going to kind of neutralize and say, oh, we're not going to really pay attention to this guy because he's got some issues, it's going to limit the koch of the Beit Din. Again, we talked about this yesterday, that there's something ethically problematic with this, because what we're saying, people who look different should be treated differently, and it's not that, at least the way I hope it's not that, but that it's that, again, we have a situation where we have a society, and we have to create a way that the Beit Din is going to be a respectable thing, and we can only go by, you know, the least common denominator, and what the least of the people are going to think, the lowest of the people are going to think, and they're going to think, oh, this guy looks different, he's blind, ooh, how can he be a Dayan? We're not going to trust him. That's going to mess up the system. So we go by what people's perception is, even if people's perception is incorrect or against what we would believe.
But it seems like a functional reason, like these judges need to actually see the chalitza.
Ah, so in chalitza, yes, but I'll go back to how we learned this. A regular Dayan can't be blind, right? Okay, a regular Dayan can't be blind. That's because of this issue of him having this nice look to him. So if chalitza could have been done only by a Dayan, then you wouldn't need le'enei. You wouldn't need to say a specific halacha by chalitza because it's true by everything. So therefore, le'enei comes to teach you. It can even be regular people, but for chalitza, you need them to actually see what's going on. Okay? For a Dayan, it's not because of... It's two separate issues here. The chalitza has to be seen. The Dayan has to look good. Okay? That's the difference. V'idach, so now, what about the other guy, right? Rabbi Yehuda, ahu le'enei, Rabbi Yehuda learned that enei is to teach you hedyoto. Tanakama, who doesn't need it to teach you hedyoto, because he has that from elsewhere, ahu le'enei, my avidle. What does he do with the words le'enei? So ahu lechidu rabba hu da'ata. Later in the pasuk, it says, and she spits. So they say that the dayanim specifically have to see her spit into the shoe. If they're just standing there and they don't happen to see that act, then it's no good. So then they say, well, that's very good. But now, where does Rabbi Yehuda learn that from? He needs le'enei for that same halacha. Right? He doesn't disagree with Rabbah about that. So they say, you're right, inachinami. So erase what we said about le'enei coming to teach you hedyotot. Okay? Ela hedyotot minale. We must learn hedyotot from somewhere else. Nafka mi bi Yisrael. Okay? It says bi Yisrael, right? Where is it? Lakim me'ein yivami lakim la'achiv shem b'Yisrael lo avay yivmi. Okay, so he learns it me b'Yisrael. Yisrael called to who? It teaches you, right? Yisrael, any Yisrael. V'ida cha Yisrael my avidle. So what does he do with Yisrael, the other guy? Mibayle lechaditani rashmo bar Yehuda b'Yisrael b'beitin shel Yisrael v'lo b'beitin shel gerin. Here it teaches you that you can't have a dayan who's a ger do the chalitza. Okay, whereas in certain situations, okay, in dine mamonot, you're allowed to have gerim be dayanim. But in other situations, we don't allow gerim to be dayanim, and this is one of them. So now, v'idach, so what does the other guy do with this? Where does he learn this halacha from? There has to be a bathing in Yisrael. Ah, they say, idach v'Yisrael achrine k'tiv. Okay, there's a different Yisrael. Okay, where's the different Yisrael? It's, I don't know where that pasuk is, but there's another pasuk with Yisrael in the context. Anybody find it? I don't know. Okay, there's another pasuk there. Find it? Anyway. Okay. Anybody see it? Let me see if I can find it quickly. Lakim Shem Lachiv, and the other one is 10. Very Vinikrashmo right. That's at the end. It says, and we're gonna use this pasuk again. Vinikrashmo bi Yisrael Beit Chalutanal. Okay? His name among the Jewish people is called Beit Chalutanal. So now again, it's among the Jewish people are the Dayanim, who could be anybody. Okay, so now he learns it from that then. Okay, so now. And then we learn there has to be a Beit Din of Yisrael and not a Beit Din from Gerim. That's what he says that one is for. V'idach, okay, so what does the other guy do with the second Yisrael? Because he doesn't need it. He already learned it from the first Yisrael. M'bayle l'chedetanya amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda. Pamachat hayinu yoshvim l'fnei Rabbi Tarfon. Okay, here's a case. Uba yivama l'chlotz. V'amar lanu, okay, we came for Rabbi Tarfon, yivama came to l'chlotz. V'amar lanu, presumably all the people around there, anu kulchem. Chalot hanal. Everybody scream out, chalot hanal. Okay, so what do you learn that from? You learn that from, v'nikrashmo b'Yisrael beit chalot hanal, that everybody who's standing there needs to say, chalot hanal. Okay. V'idach mi v'nikra nafka. And the other one learns it from, it says, v'nikrashmo b'Yisrael, nikra means they call out his name. Okay, they call out beit chalot hanal. Okay, that's where we end, okay? You would think this ping pong, they would ask, why does the other guy learn it from Nikra? But they end here without actually asking that question. Usually, by the way, we've had this where there's a ping pong, and in the end, it ends like with a vav. They say, oh, because it has the vav, and then the other guy just doesn't darshan vav him, right. And that's right, or it has like two forms of the word, and he darshan it from the double, you know, the word says this, and it could have said that, and he just doesn't say that. Anyway, here they just end simply. Okay, now they go back to this Kenim Ziknei. Okay, we said Zkenim is 2 and Zkenei Iro is 2. So now they say, well, if you're going to darshan all these cases of Rabim are 2, well, then you should go even farther. This is actually a very strange question, I think. But anyway, they say, Elame'ata bikaru shnayim vidibru shnayim. Remember, the Zkenim call out, and then they talk to him, right? And then they say, Hachinami, l'Rabbi Yehuda, harekan tish'a. L'Rabbanat, harekan shiva, you should add another 4, because those are also berabim. My assumption is that the Gemara is not really asking this as a serious question. But sometimes the Gemara asks questions to get to answers. In other words, they want you to know, it's more interesting to tell you something if you can ask it in question and answer form. Do you want to just lower it? Oh, okay. So there's, you can... You understand? They want to get to the drasha they're going to tell you. What karu darshans and what dibru darshans. And therefore, they're just kind of asking it, well, why don't you use it for this? Oh, because we need it for something else. So now we're going to learn all sorts of other halachot about how this works. It's nice. We've learned, you know, we've spent an entire masechet on yivam and chalitza, and only now are we getting to the ceremony, which is really the interesting part, right? I mean, not that the other stuff wasn't interesting, but this is like, you know, the tekas itself. The other ones were all around, they were skirting the issue, right? What if this happens, that happens? Here's the real ceremony. V'karu lo v'lo shlucham. They have to tell him directly. The Dayanim who are there, or the three people, have to, or the five people, have to speak to him directly. They can't send a messenger to talk to them. V'dabru elav, milameh, this we learned already, shemisi'im lo etza hogenet. Okay, they give him good advice, meaning, etza hogenet lo, good advice specific to his situation. What does that mean? Shem hu haya yeled v'hizkena, hu zaken v'hiyalda, amru lo, malacha etza yalda, malacha etza zchena, kalech etza shekimotcha. Okay, ba'al tachnich tata l'toch beitecha, right? This is in English phraseology, pick on someone your own size, right? In other words, what are you doing marrying this old woman? Or what are you doing marrying this ktana? It's not appropriate, okay? And therefore, they would recommend in a situation like that for him to do chalitza. We talked about this, whether chalitza's ideal, yibum's ideal, right? So here they're saying in certain situations, it's clear that chalitza's ideal, because you're going to also, what's the concern? You're going to make a ktata in your house. You're this old man, you're bringing this young wife into your house. When you already have this other wife who's probably presumably older, you're going to create all this tension in your house. You can imagine, right? Okay. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, Chalitza B'Shlosha. Now we're going to get to the Psak. Rava Paskins in the name of Rav Nachman, the halacha is Chalitza B'Shlosha. Ho'il v'stam lantana kavate. Sounds very simple and very obvious, right? But we're going to spend the rest of the daf dealing with this. What does this mean? The Stam Mishnah said, I started with that, right? The Stam Mishnah said Chalitza B'Shlosha. So what does that seem to imply? Chalitza B'Shlosha, and that's right because the Mishnah says so, and nobody disagrees. But now they say, but wait, we're going to have a problem with saying, because the Stam Mishnah says it, we do it, because we have another case where a Stam Mishnah said it's B'Shlosha, and yet we don't do Shlosha. What's that case? Amar Le Rava Le Rav Nachman, Ihachi Miun Nami. Miun should also be B'Fnei Shlosha if that's the case. Ditnan hamiun v'chalitza b'shlosha. I told you we were going to get to the Mishnah Sanhedrin. This is the Mishnah Sanhedrin. Miun and chalitza are done with shlosha. So we now have our Mishnah that says chalitza b'shlosha. We have the Mishnah Sanhedrin which says miun and chalitza b'shlosha. V'chitei mahachanami. So what's the problem? We'll say miun is b'shlosha, but we know miun isn't b'shlosha. How do we know? Because it says v'hatanya. There's another braita that says miun beit shamay amrim beitim mumchim. To do miun again. Remember miun. Younger, right? Father dies. The mother and this brother marry off the young daughter. The young daughter then decides, as she gets older, right? Just before she, just as she's exactly as she turns older, that she doesn't want to be part of this marriage. But you have to do it in front of a beit din. So now you learn that according to Beit Shammai, it has to be beit din mumchim. Beit Hillel amrim bebeit din v'shelo bebeit din. It doesn't matter. Okay, it's still three. Right, ve'elu ve'elu modim shetzavich shlosha. It just doesn't necessarily have to be dayanim. Rabbi Yosi bar Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Yosi. But then this other zug of rabbis, okay, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Yosi, machshirim b'shnayim. They say miyun can be done before two. Va'amar Rabbi Yosef bar Menume, Amar Rav Nachman. Now we get to the main point. Rabbi Yosef bar Menume, in the name of Rav Nachman, said halacha ka'oto azug. He paskins miyun is b'shnayim. Now, this is a huge problem, because we just said, the Stam Mishnah says it's three, and therefore, if we're going to go by the Stam Mishnah by Chalitza, we should go by the Stam Mishnah by Miun. Especially, they're even in the same Mishnah, right? Okay, so now, what do they answer? Ha tam chad stam av ha chatre stame. It's a numbers game. There's two Stam Mishnahs that say Chalitza b'shlosha, ours in Sanhedrin, and Miun only has one Mishnah. So now, what does the Gemara say? No, they're also this two Mishnayot. Hatamnami tre stame ninu. Ditnan, here's another Mishnah which seems to him, which says the same thing. Miana osha chatza b'fanav yisa'ena mipnei shehu b'beitin. I don't know if you remember this case. We had these cases of people who were suspected that they were trying to get a woman divorced because they wanted to marry her, and then we didn't let them marry her because they were suspect. So if she says, I forbid myself to my husband, I won't get any benefit from him, meaning she has to now divorce him, and she goes to a chacham to be matir the neder, and he says to her, I won't be matir this neder. We allow him to marry her. Why? Because when he said, I can't allow you to do the... In the case I just said, we don't allow him to because we're suspicious, okay? Because it was a chacham yachid. But if she did miun or chalitza in front of him, okay, in which case, his testimony is verifying her chalitza and her miun, which means that she's now a free woman. He can marry her. Why? Because he's with a group of other people. It's not just on his testimony alone. He's part of a beit din. So what do you see here? That you need a beit din for miun. So again, we now have two mishnayot for miyun, just like we had two bachalitza. But now what's the obvious thing they're going to say? No, we have three now by chalitza. So we're still ahead of the game when it comes to chalitza. So we could still, in theory, say, because there's three stam mishnas for chalitza and only two for miyun, maybe that's why they passed him by the stam mishnah for miyun, for chalitza, but not for miyun. Okay? So elahatam tre stame, hachatlata stame. So now the Gemara says, whoa, you're getting way out of proportion here. In other words, three stam mishnas, so that would mean, yes, we follow, and two stam mishnas mean we don't follow. The Gemara says very simply, right? Mali, michti ha-stame, if we're going to go by this halacha, it's a stam mishnah, but ha-stame, this is a stam mishnah, by miyun and chalitza, mali chad stam, mali tre stam, mali tlata. What's the difference whether it's one stam, two stam, three stam, right? It's a stam mishnah, we paskin that way, we paskin that way. So we're left still with the question, how did they hold by miyun by two, right? Rav Yosef say in the name of Rav Nachman that it was two and not like the stam mishnah? Ela amar Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, ho'il the stam bimkom machloket. Okay? Ditnan, what does that mean? There's a stam in a case where there's a machloket, we'll see. Ditnan, smichat zakenim ve'egla arufa b'shlosha, divrei Rabbi Yosef. Here's the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, okay? It tells you, smichat zakenim egla arufa b'shlosha, divrei Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yehuda omer b'chamisha. When it comes to smicha, doing smicha for zkenim and egla rufa, Rabbi Yehuda argues in that Mishnah, and he says five. Now remember, our Mishnah, our topic, we didn't learn this in the Mishnah, but the Braita said that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says five in our case, in the chalitza case. Right? The whole question here is, why do we paskin three in chalitza and not five? Because of the stam Mishnah, and not by miyum. So what do they say? Ha-chalitza b'hamiyum b'shlosha, the lo kapalig Rabbi Yehuda. It doesn't say anywhere in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda is cholek here. Do you follow? It's very interesting. The Mishnah says Rabbi Yehuda is cholek in egla rufa and smichat zkenim, and then it lists chalitza miyun, and it doesn't say Rabbi Yehuda is cholek in chalitza, where he was cholek in chalitza. So what do they say? Shma mina hadra be Rabbi Shema, Rabbi Yehuda, shma mina. So we learn from there that Rabbi Yehuda must have been chozer bo. What about miyun though? Who disagrees about miyun? Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yossi. Those guys don't appear in this mission at all. So to say we paskin like them is fine. But here, the fact that Rabbi Yehuda was the Baal Machlok and he doesn't appear in the Mishnah, he appears in the Mishnah, but not on that case, must mean that he agreed in the end. And that's why we paskin by Chalitza, we assume there's no Machloket in the end. And by miyun, we still assume there's a Machloket because this Mishnah wasn't relating at all to those guys. You know, it's not like the Mishnah was talking about them and then didn't mention them. And therefore, in that Mishnah, we say that that it's three. Okay? So Amarava, okay, a few more quick halachot. Tzrichei dayani lemik beduchta. They have to set aside a place where they're going to do it. Dechtiba al tayi bimtoha sha'ara elaz kenim. It doesn't just say she goes to this kenim, she goes to the sha'ar. They have to set a kavua place for it. Rapapa Raphuna Braid Rabbi Yeshua, Avde Uvda Bachamisha. Now we see, even though they paskin three and a bunch of situations, they did it Bifnei Chamisha. And now we're gonna finally see, which I specifically didn't raise earlier, which is the question is, what does five add to three? What's the significance of five? So now they're gonna say, Kiman, okay, so who did they do it like? Rabbi Yehuda. Vahadrabe le persume milta. Okay, they wanted to do it to have it more public. They wanted everyone to know that this woman was that she did chalitza. Two possibilities why it's so important that this become known. Okay, first of all, in general, we say that once something's done before three, it has a call and it gets around. But here, for some reason, they're requiring an extra level to make sure it gets around. Two possibilities. One, we want to make sure that people know she's a chalitza, so she doesn't marry a kohen. Number two, right, one is against her and one is for her, right? The other one is that, it's not really against her, it's just kind of verifying status. The other is to make sure that people know that she's free, available, and some of the impression talk about, it's not just so that she can get married, but it's that people will jump on her to marry her. And as we want this woman to be taken care of, Nebuch, right? Her husband dies, she's got no kids, she's on her own. We want her to be taken care of, so we want word to get around that she's done her chalitza. So what happens to the property of the husband if he does chalitza? I forget what happens to it. What happens to it? Right? Because normally the brother who does yibum gets his inheritance.
Like with boys and wolves.
Right. So what happens to her money? That's a really good question. I'll find out for tomorrow. I forget. It eludes me right now. Okay, we'll stop here for today. We'll continue with a few more cases of this tomorrow. And then we're going to get into tomorrow about this Beit Din of Gerim and what cases we allow Gerim and not in a court, which is interesting.
They might have also wanted to keep it so public, too.